Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Well, hey, all you cats and kittens. Welcome back to the Grandma Can Late Show. We are here for a very kitty-tastic episode today. We're going to have a flirking great time. I'm so grateful to my friends Ruth Ann and Charles coming back with me. We are queers all over this continent, and we're going to have a great time talking about Cat's Eye today. And we're going to begin right meow. Let me welcome you both here. Let me have you both introduce yourselves to our listeners. And I want you to tell everyone as you are introducing yourselves your name and pronouns, where we might know you from, and what is your single favorite fact, and also the thing that maybe annoys you most about your own kitty cats in your own home. Let's begin with Charles Bush today. Charles,
oh man, to the show. Hi, thank you so much for having me again. I'm so freaking excited, or should I say so flirking excited to be
so
on this,
flirking excited
to be on this pod today. My name's Charles A. Bush. As Chad said, I'm a young adult queer writer from Philadelphia. My award-winning novel, Every Variable of Us, is now available wherever books are sold. Okay, so I do have a cat, or Flurkin. His name is Goose, named after Chewie/Goose in the Marvel Universe. My favorite thing of Goose is probably he thinks I'm Carol, so he's always on my shoulder. Like, no matter what I'm doing, he'll just jump on my shoulders and just act like I'm going to take off into the cosmos just like Carol does. And I'm like, dude, I'm not really Captain Marvel. I hate to break it to you. So I love that he does that. The thing I hate that he does the most, so I started taking him outside. I go outside with him. We have a little chair right outside of our door on our patio. I just sit with him and he just looks at the squirrels and the birds and the leaves and everything and just loves being out there. But now he's like obsessed with going outside. So every time I come in the house, he just sits by the door and just meows like, hey, take me outside, Dad. So that's probably the least thing I hate. So I'm like, I can't sit with you outside all day, especially in Philadelphia where it's cold as hell right now.
Fair. Yeah, they can be persistent, our little kitty cat friend.
Let me also welcome
Ruth Ann Price back to the show. Hi, Ruth Ann.
Hey, Chad. Hey, Charles. It's great to be back with both of you. I'm Ruth Ann Price, pronoun she, they. I am a public librarian outside of Toronto. Sorry, I'm very distracted because I'm petting my Flurkin right now and his fur is like all over me. That is my least favorite thing about him is that he sheds a lot and I'm allergic. Also, he insists on being paid attention to at like the most inconvenient moment, like right now, but will ignore me all day when I have like free time. But now that I'm here trying to do something, he's like, hello, pay attention to me. This is Draco.
Hello, Draco.
Have Minerva. My other least favorite thing about him is that he has a disgusting love affair going on with a blanket that I got for Christmas, which is just gross and he needs to stop. So Minerva's great. She's off doing her own thing and ignores us completely. And that's why she's the best.
I love a good name for a kitty cat. Lastly, I'm Chad Anderson. I use he, him pronouns. I'm kind of a cat person. I'm not hugely a cat person. I like all animals. I love visiting a friend that has like a cat. So we're at my friend Philip Seavey's birthday party at their partner Chrissy Porter's house. They have like 4 cats. And at a various point in the evening, all 4 cats like jump up in my lap. I could cuddle a kitty cat all day. I love it. But then there's that side of cats that are just like, they're little fucking assholes, right? Like they are a little rude little thing. So I'm visiting my sister and her wife a few years back, and I'm like on the air mattress, and one of the cats at their house, who they have to arrange their entire schedule around, by the way. They have 2 cats that don't get along. So they like let one cat have the main part of the house for 12 hours, and then they swap it out. Like they'll get up in the night or come home from work to let the cats trade places. Anyway, one of the cats climbs on my chest and is purr, 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 wakes me up. I'm like, oh my God, you're so sweet. I'm petting. And then the cat promptly vomits on the mattress and leaves the room. And I'm like, God damn it. This is my experience with cats regularly. I really like them, but also I'm not a huge fan. I like something that will listen to me. So I'm a dog guy. Like I train my dog, but cats do not listen. They just don't give a shit, which I know is like the thing about cats that we love. What makes the two of you cat people?
My least favorite thing I don't like about Goose, because I was like rose colored glasses like, oh my God, Goose is the greatest cat in the world. He does nothing wrong. That's bullshit. I'm looking right in front of my desk and I have all my like pop and action figures and statues there. Whenever he wants my attention, when I'm like on the couch watching TV, playing a video game, doing anything that's not remotely giving him all my attention, he knows he can come on my desk and start nibbling at my figures. And I have a X-23 figure here. She had four claws. She now only has one claw because he keeps eating them and it pisses me off. So that's my biggest thing that he does. I completely forgot that. So yeah, fuck Goose on that part.
I tried getting my children a cat when they were younger, and we named it Lily Potter, and we got it from the shelter, and she was a little sweetheart, really, truly. But also, she would shred plastic. Everywhere there was plastic in the house, she would just shred it to pieces and leave whatever was inside the bag everywhere. And it got to the point where at one point she ate my Invisaligns, which are quite expensive. And
Oh
I was like, oh, we have to give you back now. Like, we
no.
need you to go find a new home.
Well, I will say, I don't know how your cats are, Ruthann, but Goose does listen. We've trained him. If I tell him, like, come or stay or sit or something like that, he 100% knows. Sometimes he just ignores me, which pisses me off even more because I know he knows not to do something, or he knows I told him not to do something, but he does it anyway because he wants my attention. But no, he definitely listens. He knows, like, he can sit. He knows when we want him to go certain places or not go certain places. He fetches, I'll throw him something, say, go get it. Bring it and he'll bring it back. You know what I mean? So he definitely listens. I feel like that's a misnomer about cats. Not all cats are just ignore you. It's kind of like Ash with Charizard. Charizard doesn't listen all the time to Ash because he doesn't really respect him. But then once he respects him, he's like, okay, I guess I'll do the fire flamethrower attack because you told me to. You know what I mean? So you got to like build up that trust for them to listen to you.
The main reason I'm a cat person is because my wife had cats. I inherited cats. Like I said, I am allergic to cats, which I did not know until later.
So you
So
gotta
this is
like you gotta like take a pill.
I take Reactin every day, and then as
Oh my
seasonal
God.
allergies kick in alongside, I go with the Flonase as well. It's a
Oh
very
wow.
fraught existence.
That's so interesting to me because my brother and his girlfriend, they have cat and she's allergic as well. And I'm like, what is it about people that are allergic to cat, but they're so great that you still want to be in their lives anyways? So I think that speaks a lot to cats.
Well, for me, it's because I would like to remain married to my
Well,
wife.
that too.
So,
Yeah.
I'm a big proponent of like when you bring an animal into your home, you need to give it your best life, right? We've got a dog, we've got a saltwater fish tank. God, that saltwater fish tank is stressful sometimes because the ecosystem is so delicate. Cats are very independent, which I know is one thing people love about them.
yeah.
Cats knocking shit off of counters and like hunting things down and like bringing you a dead bird in your house. Like there's a lot of stuff that I couldn't have that in my home, I don't think. But it's the clawing of the furniture, like the shredding of the sides of things. That's where I'm like, oh, I can't do it.
Goose doesn't do any of that. He has his, like, we have so many clawing posts and stuff all over the house. So he claws that. Yeah, he doesn't claw furniture or anything like that. He's really like he wants just to eat my action figures that are worth hundreds of dollars. That's what he'd rather do with his destruction. So yeah, no, he doesn't claw. Like, all these things are what people told us before we got Goose, and he does none of those things. So I maybe he's just a Flerken, and Flerkens are different than regular cats. I don't know, but
Who are your favorite fictional cats? Non-Marvel, like who are the cats that you love? Garfield is, of course, beloved. I never cared for any of the Garfield films, but the old
no.
cartoon and especially the old comic strips are so funny. He's lazy, he's selfish. You just kind of fucking celebrate it. His inner monologue is always very narcissistic. It's very cat. I also grew up watching like Heathcliff and like Garfield and Friends. Those were always really fun. Nermal the cat, if you guys know that character, I always really
No.
love.
I do like Crookshanks, kind of like Goose. I like the cats that are not quite all cats and have something else going on. So just Hermione's cat is a very good one. What other cats are there? I'm like, I don't know. Are there other cats in fiction?
There are
Who's cat?
thousands.
My favorite one is Salem. I love Sabrina's, like, a
Oh,
great
yeah.
show. I watched it when it was Melissa Joan Hart when I was a kid. But now with the one on Netflix recently, which just I just love that version of it so much. And Salem doesn't talk in that one, but he's still really cute and he's still familiar and he still, protects Sabrina every way he can. So yeah, I love Salem.
Okay, you have to pick between fictional cats here for just a minute. We're going to play a game. Charles, would you take Tom from Tom and Jerry or Puss in Boots from
Puss
Shrek?
in Boots, that's the easiest one ever.
No question.
Right, that was a under a lob over the plate.
Ruth, would you take Tigger or the Pink Panther?
I think I would take Tigger. He's very me.
He's gonna destroy your whole house.
He is definitely gonna claw your furniture for sure
Yeah,
and
that's
bounce
fine.
on it.
Yep.
Charles, would you take Simba or the Cheshire Cat from Alice in Wonderland?
Simba. Well, I'll take Nyla, but I'll take Simba.
Sure, I think that's
Simba's
fair.
cute.
And Ruth, you can have Sylvester from Looney Tunes or the Cat in the Hat.
I'll take Sylvester as an act of mercy. If I already got one troublemaker, so I'll take Tigger for trouble and Sylvester for care.
That's fair. We have a lot of cats on this list. There's the Aristocats. There's
Oh.
different Disney cats from the different films, like Figaro and Lucifer and Oliver, right? Which are the three names of Gambit's cats in the comics. Gambit saved some kittens from Sabretooth one time and adopted them, and they're named after the Disney cats, Figaro, Oliver, and Lucifer. If you did not know that, there's a
I
fun
did not
fact
know
for
that.
X-Men fans. We've got the evil ones like Shere Khan if we go big cats. We've got Meowth from Pokemon as well as different
Yeah,
characters.
meow.
We've
Ugh,
got
yeah.
Aslan. There are all kinds of cats all over the place. Scratchy from Itchy and Scratchy,
Yeah.
Hobbs from Calvin and Hobbes. Like the list goes on and on to the point where there's an entire series of like warrior cats, right? I also love that little character Penelope from those old rapey like Pepe Le Pew videos where there's that like black cat who's constantly exasperated by the guy. I love like gay Snagglepuss from the old like Hanna-Barbera cartoons. There's a really long list of cats. I like when they make cats villains. Cats are often sympathetic and cute and cuddly, but there's something kind of nasty and awful about them at the same time. And I think that's part of what the appeal is for folks, is the balance between the sweet and the scratchy, if you will.
I mean, aren't they known for like, the stereotypical Bond or the Inspector Gadget villain where the villain's stroking the cat, relentlessly, like while they talk about their evil plan, you know what I mean? So like cats are always kind of like get the short end of the stick on those things.
Oh yeah,
Well, Austin Powers too.
the super villain's like petting the kitty on the pillow, like, oh yes, that's fantastic. What'd you say, Ruth? I'm sorry.
Yeah, like from Austin Powers as well, right? The hairless. That's true. So I concede the point. There are lots of cats in fiction.
How about if we zoom in out toward superhero cats? So Catwoman is obviously on this list. Who are the characters that you love that emulate cats in a superhero form, either superhero or supervillain?
There's always Tigra, right? She's great.
Oh, you say Tigra. It's Tigra in my brain. That's funny.
Oh well, I don't know. I just read it on a page.
I don't know many. Like I do like Catwoman, but when I think of Catwoman, I don't really think she's like a cat. I just think she's a cat burglar, and she takes her name from there. It's not like the Holly Berry where, she gets bit by a cat or some crap, and she comes back meowing and cleaning herself. It's like so bad that movie. So I don't know. I really don't consider her a cat per se, like Cat's Eye, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. I'm trying to think of a hero cat
It's
like
funny, it's messing with your brain, but I could list like 40, you guys. It's crazy.
I'm interested to hear this list because
I
I
do.
only one I know is what Ruth Ann just said, and I don't only thing I know from that character is she's in the terrible Wonder Woman sequel played by Kristen Wiig, and I was like, ugh, I don't like this character. So
See, and I wasn't even thinking of a DC one. I think there's a Marvel one too. Oh, I was just saying, I like Felicia Hardy too. Black Cat, she's
Oh yeah,
great.
Black Cat's awesome. Again, but I don't consider her like a cat though. Her name is just she's a
But I
cat
mean,
burglar.
she's a
You know
cat
what I mean?
burglar. She
But
has a
still
few
named
hairs.
for a cat, right? The Thundercats, by the way, is
Oh
the
yeah.
cat right in the title, and there's a whole bunch of these characters.
Yeah.
There's a lot of characters based off even fictional cats. Who's your favorite Catwoman?
Selena Kyle?
No,
I
like which actress playing?
don't. Oh, that's easy. That's Zoe Kravitz. She killed it.
I
I
have.
was not a fan of that movie, but I thought she was just unreal. Her and the Penguin in that movie were just so great. I could watch
I
them
have not
forever.
seen that one, so I'm going to go with Michelle Pfeiffer. Great,
My
great stuff.
favorite is always Eartha Kitt. I'm also very
Well, yeah.
partial to to Julie Newmar, who is the kind of the original for the old Batman show. I grew up watching that show on reruns and like fucking loved it. But Eartha Kitt she lives in my brain. That Catwoman voice is iconic.
Fun fact, there's an interview when before the Batman came out, and they were interviewing Zoe Kravitz, and she said, I actually auditioned for Anne Hathaway's Catwoman in the Nolan film. And he said, like, the casting director wouldn't even let me read because they said, well, we don't want a Catwoman that looks like you. So she was very happy when she got this role because she's kind of always wanted to play it.
So I'm going to toss a couple cat-themed heroes at you, and let's draw the parallel for just a minute. Black Panther is based off of a cat.
Yeah.
Charles, opinion?
I mean, he's goated. Black Panther is literally the shit. Black Panther. I prefer Shuri's Black Panther over T'Challa's for a number of reasons. I just think she's more interesting of a character, especially in the MCU films. Yeah, no, I would definitely see that. Like, you know, when he gets into the suit, especially like Shuri, like she's running like a cat upside the ship in Wakanda Forever at the end there, things like that. So they do things that are a cat like adjacent. So I kind of definitely see them more as cats than like Catwoman or Black Cat.
Yeah, so every like big cat has some sort of superhero template, right? There's a ton of these from like White Tiger
White Tiger, yeah.
to Ocelot to Puma. Like there's all these different characters named for cats. There's something about like the scratchy. There's a Lynx character in the Wolverine world. There's all these like scratchy feline like prickly characters. Sometimes they have healing factors. They've got big claws and super senses every time, right? Some of Marvel's most favorites are like Hellcat. Ruth
Yeah,
Ann, are you a
Hellcat.
Hellcat fan? One of my all-time favorites.
I'm becoming a Hellcat fan because I'm going to be on the trial, so I have
Yes,
to.
you are in like a few weeks,
Yeah,
actually.
I have a lot more reading to do.
Patsy Walker, Hellcat, Greer Nelson, a Tigra we mentioned already. Here's a couple X-Men ones we don't think about much. Charles, what are your opinions on Shadowcat?
Oh, I love Shadow Cat.
Kitty Pryde, right?
Yeah, but again, she's not a
The
cat.
name for a cat, it's
I know.
interesting because
I love Kitty Pryde.
face through
I love her.
walls, sneak up on people, almost like she
Great.
can pounce out of the shadows, right?
Yeah.
Or Ruth Ann, do you have an opinion on Sabretooth?
I mean, he's iconic, right? He's not a very nice guy. I'm not sure I'd want to
No.
go to dinner with him, but I might go watch him fight someone.
Yeah, so there's a much longer list, and we won't spend time because we'd just be in there forever. But then we also have the trope of like the cat-themed pet. So there's a lot of like, let's give a character a cute kitty cat to come home to, right? Recently we had Jason Lowe, and before that, Nao Fuji writing the Marvel Meow series in various formats, where we have all the pets of the superheroes get together. A lot of them don't have powers. There's characters like Lee Ho and Alpine and like Gambit's three little kitty cats, but some of the more recent ones do. Ghost Rider has a cat who has like spirit of vengeance powers. Speedball, of course, has his little bouncy kinetic cat, which has been part of like the Marvel pets of like the Pet Avengers lineup. And then we've got characters like Flerkins. And this is where we were going to start this episode. We considered doing a Flerkins episode, but I pivoted to cats. I guess she's so much more integral to the X-Men universe. But Flerkins themselves, I find annoying. I understand the appeal, but I find them annoying. There's that recent The Marvels film that had like Monica, Carol, and Kamala all like fighting. And there was just this like obnoxiously long Flerkin scene with cats chasing down people and eating them. I'm like, oh my God, this is so much Flerkin. Like, it's more Flerkin than I can handle.
It was two Barbara Streisand,
Oh, yeah.
memories from Cats.
Man. Oh, yeah. God, we didn't even talk about Cats the musical, for sakes. What do you guys love about Flerkins?
I mean, I guess I should go since I have a tattoo of Goose on me and I also own Goose. I love everything about Flerkins. I love the fact that they're like non-binary. So like Goose in the MCU film is a boy for all intents and purposes, but as you just said in the Marvels, he has children, a bunch of little kittens, or Flerkins as they are. So I love that. I love the fact that he doesn't give a fuck in those movies. Like there's one scene I love where in the Marvels where he's like licking his, you know, area down there and Nick Fury's like, hey Goose, knock it off, you know. But he just cleaned himself, you know what I mean? Like he's just doing his cat thing, like let him be Nick. But I love the fact that they can travel through dimensions and like their tentacles are like interdimensional travel, which is freaking dope. That they can store so many things and, you know, from a tesseract to people like in the Marvels. Yeah, no, they're and I love how kind of like a dog, they're so loyal and they're so, you know, like territorial of their owners and you know, of their friends like Carol. Like they want to protect their friends and go above and beyond to make sure they're safe at all times, which is really like indicative of cats in real life too, because like Goose will follow me anywhere and he'll just sit outside like the bathroom waiting for me, things like that, because he's like, I just want to make sure you're safe, make sure no one's doing anything sus out here. So yeah, no, I love everything about Firkins.
So Flerkin seemed to play on the trope of like it's this cute innocent thing until it opens its fucking mouth, and then like giant tentacle monsters like Cthulhu pop out, and you don't know what's gonna happen. You know, up to and including the hairball. You know what's gonna pop out of the cat's mouth, whether it's a bird head or a mass of tentacles. Ruth Ann, are you a big Flerkin fan?
I do like the Flerkins, and because of that very thing, I would much rather that my cat vomit up a bunch of interdimensional tentacles than whatever it is I have to clean off the carpet like every other day. They've taken the one like least good thing about cats and they've turned it into something exciting and new.
What if you had to clean up a gigantic mess of tentacles off the carpet?
I mean, sure. It comes with the territory, right?
So cats, I think, are largely also about companionship, right? Like they're loyal, they're sweet, they imprint on us, they have personalities. I love when a cat makes me laugh. This is one of my favorite stories to tell, and it's so much funnier if you know my sister. My gay sister Sherry is a little bit autistic and like very particular. We're living with a roommate in college, the two of us, and our roommate had cats. Sherry folds like a fresh pile of laundry, sets it on her bed. One of the cats is sleeping on the laundry pile, so she leaves it there. And then later she comes back to put her laundry away. And Sherry does a thing where she loves the smell of fresh laundry. So she picks up the top shirt and like presses it into her face to smell. And the cat had urinated all over the shirt.
Oh
She's
my
just
God.
gagging and like, blah, blah, and I like laughed until I cried myself. Like it was so funny. I love a story like that. That makes me laugh every time. I think if for those who have not seen the recent animated feature Flow, have either
Oh,
seen
amazing.
Flow?
Yes,
Yeah.
incredible.
Incredible, maybe my most favorite animated show I've ever seen, and I'm 46.
Yeah.
But all about cats and animal life and the way they interact. There's a helplessness to this little cat that's in it who doesn't have a name, and like his tenacity and his vulnerability, it like gives you anxiety, but it's so
Yes, it does.
beautiful. Definitely recommended. Either of you have thoughts on Flow, and then we're finally going to talk about cats, I promise.
The Flow was resplendent. It's like one of the best movies I've seen in the past couple of years. It was absolutely unreal. Cannot recommend it enough.
Yeah, I second all that. It was absolutely phenomenal having a cat or Flurkin. Like you said, Chad, my anxiety was through the freaking roof in this movie because if for people that don't know, Flow is about a cat and there's a apocalyptic flood that happens and it's a cat, a normal cat, not a Disney cat that can talk and do. No, it's just a cat and has to survive literally on a planet of just all water. And it's just like I don't know how this cat's going to survive. So I didn't think,
There's no words in this film. It's all about
right?
animals
They're
and
just
like
animals.
huge animation. Just it's gorgeous, but there's no words. It's kind of like there's remnants of humans, but no actual people.
Right.
It's a really beautiful film. I really loved
Yeah.
it.
And I appreciate the fact they didn't do any kind of like cartoony, put some, like it was just a cat and everything it did was what a cat would do in those situations, which made it more real and authentic, even though it was an animated film. And there are some fantastical parts towards the end, but you know, it was really, really well done. I can't recommend it enough.
So we could also talk about cats in like religion and mythology. There's a huge amount of research that can be done in that space. Just look up like Egyptians and cats if you want just a hint of that. There is also a ton of stuff about cats and their kind of impact on human society. Things that are named for cats. The association between cats and women is also very interesting, which we're going to get into a little bit today. Ruth Ann, do you want to talk about what cats and women have in common in fiction? I mean, there's the word pussy, which we got to just toss out right away in one sentence, because that's a big piece of it too. There's a lot of interesting ideas about women as cats. So they love you, then they hate you, and they're so confusing.
Yeah.
Flaws, you know.
The temperamentalness and that fickleness and I don't want to talk about it because I don't really like it very much.
Yeah, it's problematic. I interviewed Linda Feit way back, Marvel's first female writer, who, when Roy Thomas gave her the book The Cat to write, she's like, I'm interviewing her years later, but she's like, oh, great, a woman dressed like a cat who gets into cat fights. And, Shaun of the She-Devils launched at the same time, and she's wearing a leopard print bikini and walking around with cats on leashes. Like, there's a huge amount of trope here, right? It's a really interesting idea, and it's often quite insulting.
I mean, at this point, it's just kind of tired, right? So that's pretty much all I have to say about that.
Then we come to the character Cat's Eye, who's one of many cat characters themed across the X-Men line. Sabretooth is probably the most prominent. Cat's Eye is a woman named Sharon Smith. Claremont's only names a few characters Sharon, which is a beloved name to him for personal reasons. And she's one of the original Hellions. Cat's Eye is originally created as kind of a counter to Wolfsbane. Wolfsbane, Rhain Sinclair, is a Scottish mutant raised by a very tyrannical preacher who later turns out to be her biological father. She's taught very clearly that she is unclean, that she is unfit. Her mother was a prostitute. She's a horrible person who should just hate herself. And then when her mutant power manifests, she has like a wolf side, right? She can transition kind of halfway through human to wolf, and then she has a full wolf form. More recently, she can transform into a whole wolf pack, which is crazy to me. I don't know. She divides up into like five wolves or something. But Rhain, in the early years, when she's a teen, she's really wrestling with hating this part of herself. She kind of sees the wolf part as the demonic part, the unclean part, the part that she almost doesn't want to give into. And she forms a kinship with Danny Moonstar, who has kind of an animal kinship ability, and they form a very tight bond as a result. Cat's Eye is the parallel to this character. Sharon Smith is very similar. She has kind of a languid, kind of violet human form with like big eyes that are a little cat-like, in the way that Rain has her like short, stubby, like red hair that looks kind of like a wolf pelt a little bit. Sharon talks in kind of very languid, poetic. I picture Eartha Kitt every time in like some kind of little cartoony. Actually, the voice I want for this character is like Yzma from The Emperor's New Groove when she turns into a cat.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Little evil kitten voice. That's almost what I want for Cat's Eye. But Cat's Eye is not ashamed of who she is. Cat's Eye has a halfway form and then a large kind of purple cat form. Not purple, more like lavender, like light purple, where she represents kind of a playfulness, a languidness. I'm going to keep using that word language. She kind of moves in and out of things. And she's just so happy to have Wolfsbane around. Like, oh, let's go play. We're fur friends. Let's pounce on things. It makes me think of, I grew up with He-Man. He like rides Battle Cat around. Like Cringeor turns into Battle Cat. And like Skeletor rides his like panther around into combat. Cat's Eye gives that like big cat transformation energy. So it's almost in a form of like a werecat. Ruth, do you want to talk about Cat's Eye's visual at all? Were you familiar with this character before I tossed this episode at you?
Was not. I really liked her. Yeah, she has like that smoothness and she's very liquid, like the languid, that sort of like smooth flow of movement. Very much like a cat, right? Like you can imagine her lying down in a sunbeam for like 12 hours and only rolling just far enough to stay in it and then jumping up doing something super active for a short period of time. It seems to suit the Hellions pretty well.
And Emma Frost in particular seems extremely fond of her. And Charles, same question. Was this a character you were familiar with?
No, not at all. I was getting a lot of flashbacks to the Halle Berry movie when I started reading this.
Oh gosh, Halle Berry is the worst Catwoman.
I know. Well, that can tell you what I felt about this character. It's funny you say like Eartha Kitt and that Yzma and that like poetic. For me, it was the complete opposite. Like I found her dialogue and delivery to be very like hulky, like not Bruce Banner, Smart Hulk, but like pre-Hulk when it's like, me don't like that. Hulk don't, you know, it's just like very broken English. And I'm just like, why is she talking like this? So then I, again, being the Marvel fanboy that I am, I have the Marvel Encyclopedia right here. And I was just reading her entry in it. And it says that she's, you know, that she's highly intelligent and she received an accelerated education. And within a year, she gained high school literacy and joined the Hellions. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, if she's so smart, why does she talk like this? It was just, it didn't make any sense to me. Maybe you can explain that. I don't know. But so yeah, I don't know. I thought she was fine, but I was like, there's probably a reason I don't know this character.
To me, she sounded more like an animal version of Warlock, you know, that sort of like that third person self-referential, you know, that yeah. sort of speech. That's what I got from it.
The way she speaks does give kind of a childishness to yeah. her. Yeah. That pre-Hulk thing, I can definitely see that. But it might just be the way she talks, the way she sees the world is different, right? I love the idea of like a mutant adapting to their powers in a certain way, and your powers change how you are. If you've got a black hole for a heart, which is one of the new characters in Gail Simone's X-Men, you're going to see the world a little differently than other people. If you're magic and you transfer to demon dimensions, if you are Scott and you are myopic and you see everything in red, you know, like there's, I think there's ways of like viewing a character's. So the way Cat's Eye sees the world seems to be very unique to her. And I think she's a character worthy of exploration. I write a lot of X-Men stories in my free time just for myself. I'm practicing writing skills with the hope of writing comics one day. And I did a book with Cat's Eye recently after doing this research just to kind of get in her head a little bit. And I found myself delighted by the way that she sees the world and interacts with other people. She wants that. There's a prickliness about her, but also you look at her and think she's simple and she is not simple at all. I like her a lot, actually. I think she's really interesting and she has a unique visual. There's no one else quite like her.
The fact that it's made clear in the stories that she always thought she was a cat that had a human form rather than a human that had a cat form, I think is a really interesting sort of twist on how those powers can work. And I think gives a lot of insight into that perspective, right?
Yeah, yeah. So a couple things about this character. Chris Claremont initially intended for her to be an alien, like an alien cat being who could transform, and that obviously did not happen. She's a teen that is adopted completely by Emma Frost, and the original origin story provided is that she was like abandoned at birth by her parents and raised by a cat, which is crazy. Okay, we're gonna take a quick side tangent. There's a one backup story in an X-Men Unlimited where Beast finds like a mutant cat woman and has sex with her. He has the realization that she's not a mutant who turns into a cat. She's like a cat who is a mutant, which is a crazy thing. And it's this hilarious story. I've interviewed the writer. You almost wonder if there's like a certain amount of like cat themed mutants out there in the way that there's like a lot of wolf or like Wolverine characters out there. Cat's Eye, also the visual when she's in her human form, it's the purple hair. It's like the big kind of yellow eyes with the like cat slit in them. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like it's the yellow with like the moon that comes down the middle. And she's named after a cat's eye gem. And that's why those are called cat's eyes, because they look like cat's eyes. So if you look up cat's eye gems, there's those little like round stones with like the black slit when you look into it. That's where her name comes from. She also keeps her tail when she's in her human form. So kind of like Nightcrawler. She has like a big purple tail coming out the back, which is really fun in its way as well. Thoughts on cat's eye's uniqueness and in her human visual?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up because again, I'm looking at the entry in the Marvel Encyclopedia right now. She looks, her outfit to her tail, very Nightcrawlerly, very, very Nightcrawler, which is one of my favorite X-Men, so it's pretty cool. Yeah, no, her look is kind of sleek. I like the lavender kind of fur she has, you know what I mean? And the hair, I think that's pretty, really cool and kind of differentiates her from other kind of cat people, which usually they kind of go more yellowy and orange cat kind of vibes, you know, when they kind of do a cat person. So yeah, I do like her visuals for sure.
The scientific term you'll see used for her power is A-I-L-U-R-A-N-T is the beginning of this word. So Iluran therapy. So Ilurose means cat in Greek, and anthropy is human. So it's like a cat human. So again, at least like it's like a werewolf, but a person who can transform into a cat. We talked a lot about the mythology. We got to focus more on the character or we'll be on this episode for hours. But I think there's a lot that makes her really interesting. The speaking style. And then I want to talk about her relationships with other people as well. She's part of a group called the Hellions. Claremont creates them as counters to the New Mutants. So Charles Xavier has his school and Emma Frost starts her own. We could talk for hours about Emma Frost, of course. But one of the complexities of Emma Frost is that she loves educating children. Even though she wears like lingerie and like uses whips and spiked heels to teach them along the way. But she has a lot of stories about losing groups of children. And the Hellions later in the run die very tragically, Cat's Eye among them, when they are murdered by sentinels from the future in a story that knocks Emma into a coma. The Hellions, I'm guessing, are kind of new characters for both of you. But for those that were reading the books in the 80s, these are beloved characters. And then we have the more recent run called The Hellions, in which one of their characters, Empath, or Manuel de la Rocha, is part of the team. He's part of the original team. He's kind of the most irredeemable one. He can manipulate your emotions, and he does it very selfishly. He makes women love him. He makes people fight and hate each other. He's just kind of twisting people around a lot of the time. James Proudstar is one of these characters as well, the beloved character Warpath, who starts out as Thunderbird in this group. And then we have characters that each deserve their own Patreon. And one day I will do one on each of these characters because they're all great. But we have Roulette and Jetstream and Tarot as part of the original group. And then more characters like Beef and others get added a little bit later. They have kind of a purplish uniform that they wear. There's like kind of this infamous, you see a lot of people cosplay this like tight look with like the cut, the V in the shirt collar. Again, as a counter to the New Mutants. Cat's Eye, we get the idea that she was living for a long time as a cat before Emma Frost found her. Emma, of course, works for the Hellfire Club, which is kind of a long-term capitalist organization that has been building power in the country. Like the rich and wealthy have like crazy sex parties as like they manipulate the events of the world. Emma's part of this group, and the Hellions are affiliated with this. They're often at the Hellfire Club, but they're like a high school full of students in the way that the New Mutants or Generation X is. And Cat's Eye is not super connected except through Emma, who found Cat's Eye and kind of helped like raise her away. And it is very clearly noted in a couple of places, notably New Mutants 17, and I think again in 31, that Cat's Eye is very highly intelligent. It even states at one point, like her IQ may be superior to that of Kitty Pryde. But that's not a thing we've ever really seen in the comics. We don't know the world from her view in that way very much. We've never seen a story where her intelligence really comes in to play.
It's a lot of show, not you know, it's a lot of telling, not showing. With that, which is like I said, when I read her entry and then I dove into the comics, I'm like, you told me one thing, but she's not showing any of this. It's like if you said, hey, Riri Williams is super smart, but then she does nothing with her brain in all the issues of Ironheart. It's like, well, is she smart then? You know what I mean? Like, so that kind of bugged me, honestly, because I was really looking forward to that part of her. Kind of jumping back on Emma Frost really quick, because I know we said she loves kids and all that stuff, but does she really love kids though? Like, you know, you're saying like she's like this woman bringing in all these foster kids and stuff, like these mutants, but she only wants them because they have power and they can help her get what she wants. You know,
I think
mean?
That's like, one read on it, but I think there's been a lot of softer takes on Emma and her love for children and the grief she has when she loses them. If you guys watch The Walking Dead at all, there's a lot of storylines about how we want to nurture our kids, but in this fucking world, we got to teach them to fight the zombies or they're going to die, which often happens, right? And you almost get the view that Emma kind of sees that like harsh leadership as necessary because her kids die over and over again. It's a story. Genosha, of course, is a horrible moment for her after the Hellions death. Ruthann, this was your first time reading some of these old 80s comics, I'm guessing. I have you hopping all over the X-Men universe when you do these episodes with me. What was it like for you to jump into the world of the New Mutants?
I really like these. The art is super kinetic and there's a lot of movement. There's a lot going on. I thought they were great. I like the teams. I like that there's sort of counterparts on each one of them, you know, and I like kids too, right? Not the way Emma Frost likes kids, but...
You don't train them to be weapons by any means. I'm going to cover some of these appearances a little bit quickly, focusing on moments of Cat's Eye. But I love the energy that we've captured just talking about the trope for this character and how she exists in this universe. So we first meet her in New Mutants number 16 and then 17. Chris Claremont and Sal Buscema are the creators of this character. The White Queen, Emma Frost, has brought Kitty Pryde to the Hellfire Club and wants to keep her there. There's a bizarre connection between these two, currently being played out by Eve Ewing in the exceptional X-Men book. Kitty is here and the New Mutants are there to try to rescue her. And this is where we meet the counters to the New Mutants. Emma's been recruiting children, trying to pull them away from Charles Xavier as their powers manifest. So the Hellions and the New Mutants have some sparring matches. There's a bunch of things going on, but Cat's Eye gets to kind of follow Magic and Moonstar around. The caption tells us, behind the girls, unnoticed, a shadow flows among shadows. Feral eyes gleam in anticipation of the hunt and the kill. And you picture the cat stalking the prey, right? Its tail twitching while it's watching that little hole in the wall for the mouse to come out. Moonstar is distracted, so Cat's Eye reaches down, picks up Ilyana, and slams her head into the ceiling. And we get her first words, which are, intruder, go hushabye, which we can read in a dumb Hulk voice or an Eartha Kitt voice, but this is the voice you're getting for her today. So the two escape through Magic's teleportation. The other New Mutants are captured. We jump to the next issue, where Emma Frost is holding the class. The Hellions are all bickering. Cat's Eye goes back to her human form. We get the caption, the young metamorph hates the transition to Cat's Eye. Her human body is alien, as ugly as it is incredibly clumsy, but she does as she's told. And that's one of the things is Emma's trying to get her to love both of her forms. So it's kind of an odd counter to Wolfsbane again, right? Rain hates her wolf form, but Cat's Eye hates her girl form. She looks very thin, almost kind of inhuman. And again, that alien plan Claremont had for her at first. She's very lithe, large eyes. Her hair's almost white, but it's often more purplish. So the New Mutants get captured. They are made to believe through emotional control that they are part of the Hellions. Mirage and Magic come back to rescue the teammates. There's a fight. Cat's Eye gets to watch while Jetstream and Cannonball have a sparring match to determine who is more powerful. Sebastian Shaw, Emma Frost show up. Sunspot gets knocked out. Cat's Eye is now aiding Wolfsbane in getting Sunspot to safety. So Cat's Eye is not super interested in the dynamics of the Hellions. She's more there for the entertainment. And we get the caption, as the rest of her teammates head for the exit, telepathically guided by the White Queen and protected by Sebastian Shaw, Cat's Eye springs to Wolfsbane's side to help her drag Sunspot to where her friends are waiting. And she says, girl fur person, like Cat's Eye? Smell funny, not look so pretty, but maybe friends? Red fur, stay. And she wants to play. She wants to like hang out. Let's be best friends forever. Wolfsbane invites, at the end of this issue, invites Cat's Eye to come join her at the Xavier Mansion. And Cat's Eye says, nah, Cat's Eye stays happy place. So this is kind of a way of her figuring out language in a way, but we don't get a ton. There's a ton of characters in these issues, and it's a really delightful read.
I did look at these issues. When she grabs Ilyana from the ceiling and slams her head into it, that is actually my single favorite Cat's Eye moment. It's just so inspired. So I like her better on her own than as part of the team, because she tends to get lost, I think, amongst the other members. So when she's out on her own, or when she's like running with Rain, I really like that part, because it gives a focus on her that I find really interesting.
This is kind of an era of X-Men comics where we start introducing a ton of mutants, and they have a lot of really fun things. So these are characters that have like fan favorites. There's a whole fan base for Cat's Eye out there. Maybe first and foremost, Connor Goldsmith on Cerebro famously loves this character, and she's great. Tarot, Jetstream, like all of these characters are really wonderful. I really love them, but they've never had the focus or the glow up that James Proudstar has had. Tarot and Empath probably have had the next most amount of attention, but again, there's just a ton of potential here. Charles, I'm going to have you talk about the Firestar limited series. Angelica Jones debuted in a cartoon outside of the Marvel Universe. Then they gave her a limited series, made her a mutant. She's got microwave powers. This is the series where Emma, they've talked about this in the comics like 20 times in the last 5 years. Emma murders her horse at the end, Butter Rum, to teach Angelica a lesson. Cat's Eye's part of this and the Hellions show up. But do you want to tell us about Firestar 2 and 3, which are the two middle issues of this limited series?
Yeah, I would love to. So in issue 2 of Firestar, there's a training exercise all of the Danger Room, and Jetstream dropped Cat's Eye in her human form, making her transform faster than usual to half cat form. Well, Emma Frost did not like how shit they are at using their mutant abilities. So using her telepathic abilities, she bitched them out with, "Enough! I'm barely disappointed with today's session. Perhaps this simple mind blast will inspire you all to do better." Emma don't play that, as we can see. And then she gives Cat's Eye and Jetstream the world's biggest hangover migraine, which they did not like or care for. After the session, when Cat's Eye met Firestar, Cat's Eye asked, in her best Hulk impersonation, "Why that pretty person here?" Later, Cat's Eye asked Firestar if she is coming to the school dance, which was very cute, I thought, while wearing an orange fur top that she definitely did not get from Anthropology, and an orange skirt and orange shoes, looking like she's dressed in Ben Grimm cosplay. But not like the movie quality cosplay, you know, like, or even the Spirit of Halloween store, the mid kind of cosplay. It was like her mom found every piece of orange clothing she had in her closet and handed to her right before she was set to leave the house. Like, "Here, put this on. If anyone asks who you're supposed to be, tell them you're Ben Grimm. And if they don't believe you, say you're going as Thelma. I really don't give a shit. Just take this orange stuff and go." Anyways, wanting Firestar to join them at the dance, still very cute, Cat's Eye says, again channeling her inner whole pretty person come to, the new mutant come to the dance. And at the dance, as you said, Chad, Emma Frost kills Firestar's horse Butter Rum, inciting PETA protests worldwide.
It's later retconned that she actually found Butter Rum a different place to live. Angelica that she killed her, but I don't know if I believe it.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Angelica Jones can be a little exasperating. I kind of understand.
I was not okay with this. I still have PTSD from Shimmer in Last of Us Part 2. If you know, you know. Also, the vastly superior show to Walking Dead that we spoke about earlier, but that's another podcast from another day. Then in issue 3, Cat's Eye is in a dance class, which was a very fun issue, with the others, when Firestar sets off the sprinklers because she's apparently from the town of Footloose and does not like dancing. No, that's not why. The real reason is she was getting bullied, so she wanted to get the bully wet, because that shows them. I don't know. It wasn't the best plan, but in Firestar's defense, no one's ever compared her to Reed Richards or Riri Williams, so if you know what I mean. Like, Emma Frost does everything but twirl a villainous mustache while stroking a cat and laughing diabolically in front of her, yet Firestar still considers Emma a good person, like, that's out for her best interest, which I was like, she clearly just using you because you're really good at what you do and you're very powerful of a mutant. That's why, like, Emma Frost just had a little weird thing for me, but I digress. So after Firestar sets off the sprinklers, enacting her less than thought out revenge plan, Cat's Eye runs from the room covering her head, her cat tail twitching behind her human form. By the way, can I just say, and I don't know if you experienced this with your Flurkins, Ruthann, but my Flurkin Goose, the best cat / alien creature in Marvel, fight me. If those sprinklers went off, like, in my house right now, he would be dancing in them, enjoying this water on his fur, like he was high on catnip at Coachella on a rainy night. Like, he loves water. He gets in the shower with me every time I get in. He wants to be around water all the time. He's a weirdo. So that was a little where I'm like, what, she's running out? I thought cats love water, you know?
Not all cats.
So yeah, that's Cat's Eye for those two issues, which was pretty. I think Ruthann put it best. When she's around the other team, she kind of gets lost, you know? She doesn't really have too much much to do in these issues, but when she's on her own, like in those earlier issues, the New Mutant issues, she really kind of just comes into her own and is really interesting of a character there.
Yeah, so we jump to New Mutants 39. The New Mutants have just met the Beyonder. I think he like resurrected them. They're like super shell-shocked. This is a character with like god power, basically. And Emma brings them to her school and tries to integrate them among her students. Empath walks right into the girls' locker room and tries to manipulate them all. And they are all like very, very pissed. So Sharon changes into her cat's eye form, very angry with him, obviously. Sneaky bad boy plays hurtful heart games with Hellion's new friends. Maybe play a game with cat's eyes, yes? See which is stronger, nasty heart power or claws. So this girl will like fuck you up if you mess with her a little bit. They chase him out of the room. She gets back to her human form and hugs Wolfsbane. Little red fur person, friends at last we are, yes. Come to stay, be happy with cat's eye. They all pose together for a big class photograph in Hellion's uniforms. They train together for a period of time. Emma tries helping the New Mutants kind of recover from their traumas and like is building some loyalty toward her. Wolfsbane has a nightmare and ends up changing into her like halfway form. And Cat's Eye, who's wearing this like little slinky green nightie, and she has her tail out the back, which is very furry somehow. It's like a sexy furry in some ways, rushes in to check on her. The two of them are sharing a room, and that's so cute. And small fur friend cries, Cat's Eye smells great fear, but safe you are, Rain. No need to. And Rain is in a panic and hits Cat's Eye across the face. And she's like, oh, merciful heaven, what have I done? I didn't mean to hurt you. And she shifts back to human form, and Cat's Eye gives us a sneaky red fur, fast as me, maybe, strong too. And she's not angry. The two of them just to kind of get to go play together. Everyone rushes in to check on them. It's very cute. Cat's Eye assures everyone, no problem till noisy boys broke through the wall. Silly noises like fuss. Crash, bash, mess, show off. Red fur, come with Cat's Eye. Run and howl and play. Feel great soon, promise. And they just go bounding off and they're like little wolf and cat forms, presumably to like hunt some birds or shit out there. The narrator tells us flesh and bone glow like quicksilver. The bodies of two young girls becoming a russet furred wolf and a great violet cat as they gambol into the moonlit night. Cat's Eye is cute. She's really adorable in this. We see her again in 43 where Tarot has predicted through a reading that Empath is in danger. Cat's Eye is sleeping and a sneaky bad boy bed go bye-bye, heart twister go with. We see her transform into her form, and that middle form for her is kind of terrifying. It's a little bit like Nightmare Creature in some ways. And Ruth, did you have a visual of her halfway through?
Yeah, I like that the drawings that they do right where it starts and you get all of the motion through all of the like all of the different transitions all within one panel.
It's really fun. We see her again in 53. There's a Hellfire Gala at the Hellfire Club, and it's like a big prom for all the Hellions and the New Mutants. Cat's Eye gets to put on this like yellow frilly dress with like long gloves. It's very like a debutante from the Deep South in a way. There's like a necklace and a low cut and like a yellow rose on her chest, and she puts her hands over Rain's eyes at the party. They embrace, they're playing, say hello funny way, big laugh, yes, because she puts her hands on Rain's eyes. Cat's Eye feel heart good to see small red fur friend, been forever since last romp. Charles, I read this in an Earth Kit voice, and I can totally see the like baby Hulk voice that you attributed. Like it could be cute or frustrating, I suppose. So they want to go play. They rush out of the party to like romp around a little bit, and they make a slutty Hellfire Club maid drop some champagne and go running for help. So they're just having a good time. In 56, the Hellions sit down for like a fancy breakfast with like tea and china, and Cat's Eye is in like a cute little purple pants suit, and this is where Bird Boy is like escaping from a cage, and we're not going to talk about Bird Boy today, but that's a character who deserves a Patreon. He's the Jar Jar Binks of the X-Men universe, which is kind of all you need to know. He's quite an obnoxious character, but also cutesy in his own odd little way. They're chasing Bird Boy around. Cat's Eye's chasing a little bird mutate man, basically. It's a cute little issue. In 62, Magma has officially joined the Hellions, and Cat's Eye is training against her, which is, you know, there's this hot lava lady. So a lot of fun moments, but just not enough to make us like really indelibly know these characters. I would read a fucking Hellions series written in this era. I would write a Hellions limited series written in this era that like just gives us the panache of what we need to care about these characters deeply. Fabian gives us the characters again in his New Warriors run. His early 90s New Warriors stuff is so great. I love this run.
So I found the tendency to put a prologue to a different story in the middle of these stories or at the end of them, I found very confusing. I just want to say up front. So I was like, what is happening? But I think I got most of it. So we've got the Hellions back. We've got Cat's Eye and Jetstream and Rowlet and Terra and all the old ones. But we also have Beef and perhaps my favorite Hellion of all time, Beefatron, who I can only imagine was inspired by Beavis and Butthead. I have no idea what has happened. They invade a foundation. They fight TAI at the command of Emma Frost. Cat's Eye see friend her. Cat's Eye smell bad scent. Minty bad scent. I think the woman that she smells and attacks is Night Thrasher's nanny, caring person. I don't know. I think it's the same old woman from later in the prologue, which is for something that happened before. I don't know. It's
yeah,
so
there's a lot of complicated New Warriors chronology here. They're facing some decisions that were made by their parents at the end of the Vietnam War, basically.
Okay.
Where they tapped into like this universal power stream that resulted in their children getting powers. It's a long-running plot line from this, from Fabian Nicieza. It's quite good, but it's a lot to jump into if you don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And a Bevatron, by the way, Ruthann, is a particle accelerator.
Okay. So not Beavatron.
Not Beavis.
It's supposed to be Beef. And so, you know, it just seems so like a pair. But anyway, that also good to know. Was not clear from the issue I was reading. But so they're then sent out after specifically Night Thrasher and Silhouette. She's really, really very scary, like werecat, not really much of a human form at all, just very purple, very big cat, but sort of flattened in a weird way in terms of her look. And they're fighting, and Emma Frost shows up, and there's the old woman that I think was the Minty Bad Scent lady. And they're like, okay, everyone's really equally paired, so we're going to decide who, I think, is it Firestar that they're fighting over? Yes, Firestar gets to decide which team she goes with based on which team wins. So Cat's Eye actually beats Night Thrasher, which is very impressive to see. She cuts right through his armor. He jumps on her back. She kicks him off. That's Cowboy in Black rides Cat's Eye. Then Cat's Eye gives Cowboy in Black a ride in return. And she like donkey kicks him into the wall. And I don't know. They depart peacefully, sort of. The New Mutants. This is who this is. New Warriors.
So the quick premise here, Fabian Nicieza has gathered a bunch of characters that don't fit together from different parts of the Marvel Universe and launched a new team. Firestar is a really new character at this time. She gets paired with Vance Astrovic. They're both mutants. So this is kind of an early story. One of her few previous appearances is when they tried to force her on the Hellions. So this is Fabian bringing in Emma and the Hellions to give Firestar like an early narrative arc, very simply put.
Well, and it's great too, because Emma's like, so this team won, so you have the right to choose. And Firestar's like, actually, I always had the right to choose. Thank you very much. And I don't choose you, which was very refreshing to see.
Yeah, Firestar's interesting. And Emma gets like this big slutty like pinup on one of the covers. It's a fun couple of issues, but there's a lot going on in it. I love Namorita. Like, there's a lot of characters here. Silhouette is a character that I love, love, love. Night Thrasher's got a lot of potential. There's a ton of characters here that I love a lot, actually.
A lot of action. They were exciting and fun. And I thought while I read them that I understood them, but now going back and having to talk about them, I'm not sure anymore.
So this is kind of it for Cat's Eye. And that's what's crazy, is because we remember this character very fondly, a lot of X-Men fans, but that's kind of all she's got. Because in Uncanny X-Men 281, they are at like a Hellfire Club party. And there's a crazy thing about Fitzroy and Sentinels from the future, but the Sentinels end up attacking this party accidentally. And all of the Hellions basically are like horribly murdered. So they're dead. And the only time we ever see Cat's Eye for a long time after this is when like Emma is like wrestling with her guilt. And right after this is where Emma ends up in the coma. She gets that shit with Iceman where she helps him learn that he's gay and has like big powers. And then she gets awakened during the Phalanx Covenant and becomes the headmistress of Generation X, which is her second big arc before she gets added to the X-Men team by Grant Morrison and Joss Whedon later, and gets a lot of more indelible exploration. So Cat's Eye is basically only there once in a while when she gets reanimated from the dead. During the Necrotia event, she's there. She gets to hiss a little bit in a few places. The dead Hellions are back with the transmode virus and they fight the X-Men. There's a moment where like Cat's Eye seems to be hungering for flesh, like almost, you almost wonder if Empath is like making her super vampiric. Tasty, tasty flesh. Cat's Eye wants it all. And she gets a you are weak alien moment toward Warlock. They are back again on Krakoa after the Hellions have been resurrected. And we see Cat's Eye a few times in the Hellions kind of going after Empath for being a shithead. And later we see her at an X-Men annual at the Green Lagoon, and she gets to kind of wag her tail. And that's basically it. She's not a character who's ever had a ton of focus. Now, an interesting thought experiment for listeners. You love the character Wolvesbane, who has a ton of complexity. But let's swap places with Wolvesbane and Cat's Eye for a minute. Wolvesbane's only shown up 6 times. We know she grew up in this like awful church that told her she hates herself and that she hates her wolf form and she transforms once in a while. And that's all we get about her. We don't get any more exploration. And then you kind of want more because here's this really interesting character. And that's kind of what Claremont and later Nicieza have done with Cat's Eye, is give us enough to make us want more. But she's just never had a ton of focus. What are your thoughts on Cat's Eye as we're kind of wrapping up our conversation about what makes her unique? What do you want more of about this character? Let's go Ruth and then Charles.
I want more of what I always want more of, which is relationships. That's what I find most interesting. I would read in a heartbeat, Chad, if you would like to write the miniseries of Cat's Eye and Wolfsbane's adventures in their fur forms.
Oh my God, I would love that. I would love to write that.
Write that. I will read that in a heartbeat. Absolutely. But yeah, like that relationship in particular, I think there's a lot of potential there that hasn't been explored. And I'd like to see that. Then you get more of Wolfsbane and Cat's Eye.
Yeah. Charles?
Yeah, I would just like to see them keep their promise of this character being so smart and being all this and being like, they really talk her up to be this great character, which I think she has the potential to be. I would just like them to really explore that. Like, show us what makes her tick. Show us her using her intelligence, you know what I mean, to get out of problems and to solve them. Just give her more agency in a story. So I second Ruth Ann. Like, if you want to write that, Chad, I'll be there to read it.
I would have a flirking great time writing that series. That would be wonderful. The stuff I want most about this character, and again, I wrote her in a story that will probably never see the light of day just because I'm practicing my comic writing skills. I find myself really curious about the way she sees the world. I think there's a if you take Warlock in The New Mutants, he's so indelibly different from the other characters. The way he speaks with like self-friend and wanting to understand emotion. I like a character who offers a very different perspective. When you put Longshot on the team, Cat's Eye almost seems to have this kind of alien perspective. And I think you could put her on almost any adventure. Cat's Eye versus Sentinels, Cat's Eye and the Shi'ar Empire, Cat's Eye among the Morlocks. And she's going to bring a very unique perspective in the way that no other character kind of can. Her intelligence is a big part of this. Her relationships are not very well formed. We see a fondness between her and Rain, and we see kind of a connection that's stated but never explored between Sharon and Emma, which that leaves me wanting to know more about Cat's Eye's background. And we do that one story where we talk about what she came from and what she survived and how Emma saved her. And then we have a very different perspective on this character. I think this character has a ton of potential. And I think the perfect framing for this was to really talk about like cats in fiction for a little while and like what makes these characters so interesting. I also love the visual. She's not named for a cat. She's named for a gem. And I think that idea of what that means, there's a way of like giving some mystical applications to this character or even magical that I think are quite interesting as well. What are your resonant thoughts on Cat's Eye as we start to wrap up our conversation? Anything showing up?
No, I forgot to mention there's a K-pop group called Cat's Eye as well.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So maybe she can team up with the Cat's Eye group and like go on stage. I don't know.
Cat's Eye and Dazzler hanging out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this character, like the character like Renzi, for example, was just an X-Men villain for so long until we gave her like a place on the team. Emma was that way too. I think Cat's Eye and some of the Hellions characters really have an opportunity to be major players in the X-Men universe under the right writers. And I think Cat's Eye is extremely unique in a world full of very, like a sea of like a very obscure mutants, right? There's 1,000 characters you can choose, but it's hard to give a character like Beef a glow up because there's 100 other strong characters, right? Cat's Eye gives you that person on the team that is like the Feral, right? You want Wolverine or Feral or X-23 or like there's different ways of like you want that savage character. And Cat's Eye provides a very unique version of that like scrappy fighter, hunter, tracker character. I feel like she has a healing factor and some mysticism about her that's just never been explored. I'm a big fan. I like her a lot. I'm very intrigued by her, which is a great place to start as a writer with a character. As we're wrapping up, where can people find you both online? And is there anything you'd like to plug? Let's go Ruth and then Charles.
So I do not have anything to plug. As a librarian, just go to your public library, borrow your comics from them. If you want to, we have lots of things for you. You can find me online, mainly on Instagram. I'm at Hedda Dabbler, like Hedda Gabler, but dabbling in all of the different things. I mainly post pictures of my cats and pictures of the sky when I post anything at all. But usually I'll just go through and follow all of your things and like them. So I'm a good fan to have around.
And Charles.
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, all those great places at Charles_A_Bush. Also, just go to my website. You can find all my stuff there as well. Please check out the book, Every Variable of Us, available wherever books are sold. I have a couple things in the pot right now. One of them being a queer young adult novel that's all about ballroom. So those of you that don't know what ballroom is, if you've ever seen the show Pose, imagine that, but a young adult version of it. So that's out on submission right now with my agent. And I'm writing another book right now that's all about kind of like The Hate U Give meets like Dear Martin. So it's a YA book. I've been doing a lot of research, reading all of the 1619 Project to kind of give me some more of that history and my history in this country. It's funny because I'm going on a side tangent now. Sorry about that, Chad.
You're okay.
So I also have a comic that we're trying to get done right now. It's called Armor Girl. And we actually got a blurb back recently from one of the authors in the 1619 Project that gave a great, great review for it. So that's looking to come out. But with all that being said, a lot of heavy stuff that I'm working on. So I'm actually working on my own little comic as well, which is What If Goose Was Agatha's Familiar? So it's just something fun to write. So I've just been doing that on the side, like in between chapters of the book, which is kind of keeping my sanity, because otherwise I would definitely be losing it with all the oppression and atrocities that have been done to black
Absolutely.
People in this country for 400 years. So
yeah. Well, in writing about and dwelling in it, I'm a therapist in my day job, and the grief and the trauma are heavy. So superhero stories and the joy of making this show keep me very well balanced. I misquoted one thing earlier. I want to correct. I said Cat's Eye was killed by the Sentinels. Some of the Hellions were killed by Sentinels. Cat's Eye was actually killed by Trevor Fitzroy. She was one of the characters that he like drained her life because he has to have life force to open a portal. So she died even worse, which is terrible. Trevor Fitzroy is a fucker, but I love him. All right. Lastly, I'm Chad Anderson. You can find me online at graymalkin_lane on Instagram. I keep my own social media private because I got kiddos. The two of you are welcome to follow me if you'd like. Just ask. The next episode out on the Patreon immediately after this is all about another Russian character. We got to talk about Blind Faith a while back, the three of us. I'm delving into the world of Alexei Vazhin, the Marvel's KGB director, which is a really fascinating journey. I'm very excited to talk with my friends Derek Kunskin and Tristan Palmgren about this character. Over on the main show, the next episode coming out after this will be all about X-Men Origins Colossus, who is, of course, a Russian character as well. Vazhin appears in that issue. My guests on that episode are Erica Schultz and Sarah Gailey. We get to talk about all about fight choreography. It's a really fun episode. And watch for the trial of Patsy Walker later in the month. We have a lot of really fun things coming out on the show. I just built the show into June, where we get to do all the Pride Month stuff, which I'm very excited about. So thank you, everybody, so much. Thank you, Charles. Thank you, Ruth. We will see you all back here next time on the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon. And now stay tuned for some thoughts on fascism as a special guest and I talk about a Red Skull story and its modern applications. Georg Elser was born in 1903 to a poor family with an alcoholic father. Georg went to work as a young teen and spent a lifetime afterward finding work wherever he could. In a clock factory, assembling wooden propellers for airplanes, as a carpenter. He became a father himself and discovered the legal expectations to pay child support sometimes exceeded the wages he could gather in post-World War I Germany, where the economy was just kind of fractured for guys like him. A talented musician, Georg was dedicated to his complicated family, though at times they had very strained relationships, and he had a series of romantic dalliances, one time with a married woman who ended her marriage for him, but just kind of a normal guy. So again, Germany after World War I was a difficult place because of all of the sanctions and reparations that had been placed upon the country. If you recall, the monarchy had been broken apart and the Weimar Republic took over. This is where a lot of white workmen began listening to certain voices around the country. Communism was one popular belief system. Nazism and Aryanism that made these people feel special was another among the German working class. So, as the people around him began to pay more attention to Hitler and the Nazi ideals in the early 1930s, Georg began realizing that Hitler represented a very specific threat to his country and the working class that he cared about so much. So, Georg began to wonder if he might be able to do something to stop it all, because he could feel the world going dark. He began making plans to commit a political assassination of Adolf Hitler and his top aides. He increased his church attendance, he sought calm in his resolve, and he spent months and months and months planning this. He was very resolved and was very careful. After his eventual arrest, he told the officers, quote, "I believe in the survival of the soul after death, and I also believed I would not go to heaven if I had not had an opportunity to prove that I wanted good. I also wanted to prevent by my act even greater bloodshed," meaning killing Hitler was a lesser evil than doing nothing for this man. So over a period of several months, Georg gathered materials he would need to make his bomb. He took some supplies from an employer, he purchased others, and he began practicing the construction of the bomb, testing several versions of it out in the dark woods. Knowing that Adolf Hitler would be giving a speech in a particular hall on a particular place that he did every year, Georg began sneaking into that hall every night, months in advance, and slowly building a bomb directly into the podium where Hitler would be speaking weeks and weeks later. Weeks after he built this device, and he finally set it to detonate with a simple clock timer in the middle of Hitler's speech during a Nazi rally. So on November 8th, 1939, Hitler and several of his top aides, including Joseph Goebbels, Rudolf Hess, and Heinrich Himmler, who are all names of horrible people that you know, gathered around the podium as Hitler gave his speech. Had the plan worked, an entire contingent of Nazi leadership would have been killed in one fell swoop. The bomb detonated in a massive explosion that injuring 62 people, some of them very badly, and it killed 8 people. 7 of them were really dedicated members of the Nazi party. 120 people were present in the room when it exploded, which caused the roof to collapse, by the way. But Hitler had somewhere else to be, and he cut his speech 13 minutes early and had just departed with his aides 13 minutes before the bomb was set to go off. Georg Elser ended up arrested by the Gestapo. He was beaten and tortured for days. Then his entire family was arrested and questioned in front of the man, who was barely recognizable due to the swelling and his injuries. His employers, his roommates, everyone who had ever been known to have contact with him were arrested. Some were jailed. All of them were questioned. Elser was held by the Gestapo for months and tortured the entire time. He was injected with drugs, subjected to hypnosis, and later forced to reconstruct his bomb for the Nazi officers. They were so impressed with it, they included diagrams of the bomb in their own training manuals for their soldiers after this. The day after that bombing took place, angry guards at Buchwald concentration camp blamed the Jews there, and they pulled 21 individuals from the lines and immediately killed them with gunfire. The rest in the camp were denied food completely for the next 3 days as punishment. Georg Elser was never given a trial. He was held in Sachsenhausen concentration camp and later Dachau for 4 years as the war raged on. In April 1945, as the Nazis were badly losing the war in Europe, Elser was shot by a Nazi officer and thrown into the ovens. Dachau was liberated 1 week later. In subsequent years, Elser has been honored by the German public and is considered a national hero. There are statues built in his name, a national award given to people who demonstrate civil courage, and even streets named after him in Germany because he once tried to assassinate a group of corrupt leaders. There are over 2 dozen more documented assassination attempts on Hitler from within Germany during World War II as well. Okay, we're going to jump to Captain America 299. This is where Captain America has been building in this long story from J.M. DeMatteis. This is the culmination, and it's so good. It's so rad. I love this story so much. Captain America rushes through the Red Skull's base. He finds Nazi flags, pictures of Hitler, and he runs, by the way, right by that cosmic cube where that contains the soul of Adolf Hitler itself. We covered that in a previous episode, if you recall, so JM did his homework. The Red Skull says that he has injected both Captain America and himself as elderly men with poison so that they can die together, like good boyfriends should, at least the way he sees it. As the Sisters of Sin fight Captain America's captured allies, Mother Superior, the daughter of the Red Skull, realizes that the Red Skull has been grooming Zemo, Helmut Zemo, to be his heir, since he doesn't see a woman as being worthy. So she kind of shuts Zemo's brain down, renders him brain dead. He comes back later, we'll get there, while calling out, "No, I'm the only heir apparent to the Skull, yet my father has rejected my claim to his mantle of evil. He wants no heir. He seeks to take his evil with him when he dies, take it to a higher plane of reality. If I let him, I am the fool. There's only one way to assume the Red Skull's crown of evil. I'll take it from his bloody hands." Hearing of his daughter's plans, the Red Skull just blows up his house instead, and then he puts on his Red Skull mask for one final fight with old man Captain America. Okay, now we jump to 300. This story is called Das Ende, which is so perfect already. Captain America and the Red Skull have a huge fist fight. It's just two old men punching each other. At last, the fire burns in your eyes," yells the Red Skull. "The fire of cosmic loathing, of divine madness. You finally see that this is the way it must be. Two gods lock
locked in a raging battle for all eternity. And Captain America is so fucking sick of it. I have had enough of your babbling, enough of your lies. I don't want to hear anymore. And boy, do we understand how that feels. You will hear more, Captain. Our spirits entwined, we will carry on the battle till time's end. It is destiny's wish, our sole reason for being. Admit it, Captain, I've gotten to you. I've succeeded in bringing you down to my level. It does not matter if you beat me. I've already won. I have won. Maybe you are right, Skull, he says. Maybe you have gotten to me. I've fought hundreds of foes in my career, Skull. Criminals, madmen, tyrants, and never before have I been moved to truly hate a man because he was my enemy. But you, you revel in atrocity, bask in evil, delight in depravity. I hate you, Skull. I hate what you are, what you've done to my friends, what you've done to the world. I hate you with a passion that frightens me. I see now the only way I'm ever going to be free of you is to see you dead. And this is all coming across very horny in a very weird way. In the end, Captain America decides to not kill the Red Skull, which is an insane decision. Wow. Instead, the Red Skull just rips his own red mask off and he starts to cry pathetically. And then the perfect ending to this story, he has a heart attack and he just dies. He's just this pathetic man who just dies. He leaves fingernail scratches down Captain America's face as he withers away. And Cap says, now do you see, Skull? We're not two gods in a cosmic dance, just two tired old men. You did your best to bring me down to your level, and God help me, you came close. But in the end, you failed and you died a pathetic death. But you're not taking me with you. I'm gonna find a way to beat the poison. I'm going to live. And he does, because the Native American shaman, the Black Crow, comes in and saves his life, and it turns out all of his friends are still alive too. Yay! The story ends as Captain America carries the body of the Red Skull out into the light. Jack Monroe, the 1950s nomad, says, Steve, who's that old man? Who is he, Jack? He's yesterday. He's the past. And it's time at long last to bury the past for good. In the next issue, by the way, Mother Superior takes her father's body, renounces him, spits on him, and throws his body in a bonfire, and then she and all her little nun friends get reverted back to childhood. It's a cute little story. It's an end for Sin until she comes back in a major way. Okay, that was a lot of preamble. Let me welcome one of my very favorite people, the incredible Derek Nichols, to talk about this wild story with me. Derek, welcome, and are you a Red Skull fan?
Hi. Wow, what a leading question, Chad. No, I'm not. But, not a fan, but I can be entertained.
Absolutely. Everyone reacts to that question the same way, by the way. Like, oh, no, I'm not. I don't know if you're a big Captain America head. This may have been one of the few times you've ever jumped into the world of Cap.
He's not one of my go-tos to read, but the story, his group and the cast of characters really, like I said, was an enjoyable read. I usually like team dynamics a bit, so Captain America never appealed to me, but this is very much a team, parts of it are very much team-like, so.
What was your familiarity with the character of the Red Skull before reading this long-form story?
I mean, I just knew him, man, like just over time of just him being, you know, a Nazi and just a really, really bad dude. So not even just from the Captain America movies, but what was that? The Axis event, whenever all the heroes were inverted. Like that was one
of Xavier's brain. Yep.
Yeah. So really,
I would admit the Red Skull's fun. I mean, he's terrible, but he's fun. That's a good story.
But it allows, I think, having a character be so terrible probably like lets a writer really lean into it. So probably is fun, right?
It's fun sometimes, and it's very problematic others, and it's uncomfortable others. Okay, so let's talk about the Red Skull's big journey. He wants to get an heir. He ages up his daughter. There's all this crazy shit going on. He brings in Zemo. He's torturing Cap's friends. But in the end, all he wants is to die in the old man arms of his elderly lover, the only person who could ever understand him. During this storyline, Red Skull also kills a man named Horst, who was like one of his few old Nazi friends because they were trapped in the poison gas together back at the end of the 1930s. What are your thoughts on the big horny final opus of the Red Skull here?
I didn't really read into it as horny as you did, so I don't really want to answer that question.
Well, whatever your thoughts are.
I just, I mean, it's very much like the just any kind of culminating battle between like two people who are vastly different, but at the same time are so steadfast in their ideologies that it was one of those epic type battles. So Arnie, I was really interested to learn more about him because he made an appearance in the recent Avengers Academy, yep, Infinity comic. And so I had no clue that this character existed. So when I saw him, having the opportunity to read him actually written decades ago, it was cool to see a queer person represented, not necessarily like in makeup for half of the time.
This is the
But
story. Well, this is the story that inspired Anthony Oliveira to come back and use this character. Like it's
yeah.
hugely imprinted on Anthony specifically.
Is any representation good representation? I don't know. But it was just cool to see Captain Cap's like relationship with him and how he valued him as a person. I enjoyed that. And Bernie as well. Like they were all there to support him, especially towards the end.
Yeah, Jack Monroe, Black Crow, the Falcon,
Right.
and there's a bunch of characters running around. Did you have any thoughts on the Sisters of Sin?
Visually, really cool. And I like how they all had different like powers. I felt really bad for the one that looked hideous compared to the other ones, but I would like to see them come back. I think they'd be a lot of fun. Have they come back?
They have come back. Yeah, there's actually several stories. I could do a Patreon on these guys. I have ideas. What the Sister Pleasure specifically comes back and changes her name to Raunch.
Oh, okay, makes sense.
It's
Sure.
a
Yeah.
real thing. One of the things about this story that I find very frustrating, but it's also Captain America, like, I hate you, Skull. I hate you. I hate you. I hate you, but I'm not gonna kill you. Even though you have murdered millions of people, I'm not gonna kill you, right? Maybe he's gonna turn the Red Skull over to the authorities who can more appropriately judge him, but we've seen Cap commit murders on the page before, so this story I find frustrating.
Who knows how any of us would react when we were given that situation, right? Like killing some, you're right. Captain, he's killed a people on the page before, but this is like a metaphor for an ideal. I feel like it was a him just kind of grappling with almost killing a part of himself too, because he's been fighting this battle since World War II and being displaced from time. Like, I don't know, maybe there's a part of him that like if he kills this guy, like what does he have to fight for? And especially with all the stories that are leading up to this about how like America kind of frankly sucks or has like not done its people well, grappling with an issue of faith right now.
There's interesting, I mean, the parameters of this were in Reagan America during this time, which is a very different time. The stories of queer people, Native Americans, and Black people all used in this story, as well as Jewish people, are all very relevant to the time period. We've talked about some of those in earlier episodes. But Cap, at the end of the day, one of the reasons he doesn't want to kill the Red Skull is the Red Skull's just been ranting, ha ha ha, I brought you down to my level. If you kill me, I'll carry that into the next life. Now, in modern comics, the Red Skull's almost taken like a Mephisto-like presence. Like he's like a floating evil that can like infect people, like the Shadow King almost. So you look at like what he wanted and what his connection to that is, and it's quite twisted. But then it's the pathetic heart attack that just knocks him over in the end, because in the end, that's all these old, terrible people are.
I mean, I don't want to say this without saying it. I mean, isn't that what we're all hoping for right now at this point anyway? Like, in being an American, so like sucks that that's personally to wish for somebody's death has never been in my personality. But now it's like, I don't know. Like, if I had the chance, I don't.
Well, I think it's okay because we open this story, I open this episode with the story of Georg Elser, which is one of several stories like this. But this man has been remembered as a national hero, right? We live in a country where I think, as Democrats or progressives or even queer people, we want to play by the rules. We want to have the morals and decencies that aren't always offered us. But I don't know that we always have that luxury. Not that I am advocating for anybody to do anything, but protest is important. Standing up is important. The great ethical debate of if you could go back in time and kill Hitler as a baby has been around for nearly 80 years now, you know? What were your thoughts on the Georg Elser story to open all this?
I hadn't heard that story, so it was the context was super helpful. I went in regards to the parallel to this to the comics that you had me read, because I can see it's about all about that choice and then how he was honored afterwards of being that hero. I can't think of a situation where that would happen in modern day, but who knows?
I think we have a lot of modern stories of people who sacrificed their lives to fight evil regimes. Not in America so much, but some. Things like whistleblowers, etc. But when you go to places like Nepal or India or Japan or Russia, I mean, there's a ton of stories out there. North Korea has a lot, right? And the government's ability to bury the truth and to take out people who offend them is one of the signs of fascist regimes, frankly. But it's inspiring to see people strong enough to fight back. It's crazy to be living it rather than studying it, though. It's intense.
I guess it's that. That's was more what I was trying to say. Like being in it at the time, it's difficult to see a way out of what we're kind of faced with in general. So just to have, I was just home visiting my family this past weekend, and just we're trying to like just talking about how to repair like the way I'm again being in the United States, the way our country is handling itself. I can't see a solution. So again, if somebody took action and ended the federal administration that we have. I still can't see that fixing the problem or be that person
No,
being murdered.
but when you knock the head pin down, it does change a lot of things historically, because the support is garnered from loyalty to a particular person, even when that person is insane. And there's a lot of direct Hitler-Trump comparisons. They're both.
True.
I remember early on in my show being like, I'm not gonna have political conversations, but like it just feels like we got it now. Like people who listen, yeah, I hope you are finding some of the words you wish you could speak out loud present here while we remain vague. But it's a tough thing to watch. Derek, I always appreciate your trust and your thoughts. I know that this would not be your ideal episode to participate on the Grey Malkin Million podcast when we're talking about fascism, but I really appreciate you taking this journey with me. I've really learned to respect your friendship and your opinion over the last few years, and it's just an honor to have you here every time.
Again, I want to throw that appreciation back to you, like having providing these opportunities to make us all this community that is being, that you have kind of fostered here, think about what we're all dealing with in the current, and then how it's just kind of like a never-ending loop, it seems like, with humanity. You get me in a wrong headspace, and I will downward spiral real quickly. But I appreciate the opportunity to kind of just disassociate by associating in a way. So,
Yeah, it's nice to
yeah.
have like every one of these conversations, every historical anecdote, every comparison from then until now, it's taught me something new each time, because I didn't know the story of Georg Elser either until I researched it specifically for this conversation. Now I won't forget his name.